Hey there, welcome to the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. If you like the analysis on the podcast and want to support it and come check out our premium content, use the link in the description and use promo code TACO on sign up. You get access to all of our premium content for every sport, baseball, NBA. NBA playoffs just started. You know, you've got NASCAR, Xfinity, soccer, you name it, we've got it. We're covering it all, and we're doing excellently on all sports, on all ends. It's been a pretty hot run for us. We've had a lot of huge winners here at the DFS Army as of late, and you can come join us, be a part of what we've got going on, join our premium chat. Awesome content. You'll definitely want to come check out some of the numbers I'll be referencing on the pod, and you can do that at DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO. All right, the Valero Texas Open. One of the biggest fields, if not the biggest field that we have seen so far on tour, over 150 golfers teeing it up, and if you factor in the standard cut of T70 and ties, you're looking at about 75 guys making it through the cut, which would come to about 50% of the players making the cut here. So that's one of the main things that we'll be focusing on this week, along with just the overall really poor strength of field here. It seems like every single major golfer outside of Sergio Garcia skipped this event. So you've got a whole bunch of golfers and a whole bunch of not really good golfers. Looking at the odds right away, you can tell there's no clear favorite. Sergio's sitting at 14-1. And there's no one in this field over 1,000-1 or even 900-1. Usually we see at least a few scrubs. They're in the thousands, but the field's kind of equalized as you look through the whole thing. Not a whole lot of clear favorites. Really, it's anyone's. It's up for grabs, and we usually see that kind of thing going on. We have some very unusual winners here at this course, and I think that's going to be the theme of the week, honestly, is anyone can really win this thing. Guys have done well here can do poorly, and vice versa. Course history, while there are some horses, particularly a few ones, we see a lot of guys here with good course history that have horrible miscuts along the way. And definitely not as many major course horses like we've seen the last 2 weeks, especially. And looking at the course real quick, the course is a 7,400-yard par 72, very long, but it doesn't really have any sort of unique features. It's not too wide, it's not too thin. Not the fairways. Or the greens are fairly large, but you know they're slow, average Bermudas, pretty typical, honestly. And the scoring is it comes in slightly over par. It's about average. Really, a lot of things about this course don't really stick out all too much. You've got four very long par threes. All of the par threes are over 180 yards in length. You've got four long par fives as well, all around the 600-yard mark. And then the par fours are really spread out. You've got a couple of not really drivable, but really short par fours, four medium length and four long par fours. So the par fours are really spread out, not like last week where they all focused on that medium range. So not really looking at par fours as much. It is a par 72. And par 72s with four par 3s and four par 5s have the lowest amount of par 4s on PGA Tour courses. So the par 4 scoring isn't as essential here. I mean, it's still very important. It's the core of, you know, fantasy scoring and all. But with the longer par 5s, which are kind of unscorable, I think two or three of them are three-shot holes where pretty much no one can hit them in two. So we see that in the eagle numbers. Not a lot of eagles at this course, even though there are four par fives. You might even have more chance to get an eagle on one of the short par fours than some of these 600-plus yard par fives. But the long par threes, I think being able to just keep the pace on those, pretty important. I know that par threes aren't all that important this week, but they all are pretty. They're all pretty huddled in at a very close range between 180. And just over 200 yards. So that's something to look at here. One thing I do have this this week I'm finally able to do this again, is the historical performances tab. So you can look at that and just look over all the top fantasy scoring performances. Here the winner usually scores, just going back over the last 10 years here, the winner scores about 100 to 115 fantasy points. Usually in between 100 and 105. That's about where the winner scores, maybe more towards like 110. That's what we've seen the last 3 years. The winner here scored 110, 110, and 111 fantasy points. So if you have someone that you think is going to win, that's probably a pretty good projection for them, I'd say. Just looking at what correlates with success here, and we also have the fantasy point by stat page, which is really, really neat. It shows basically, it'll have each stat, and then it'll, like, for example, driving distance, it'll show the players that hit 300 plus and how well they did in their average finish, average fantasy points scored. Then guys that drove 290 to 300, 280 to 290, 270 to 280, etc. Do this for all the key stats, and we can kind of see which stats are going to be important. And another thing I did add this week is I took strokes gained approach, and I decided to further break it down into three categories. Strokes gained, well, I'm not going to say strokes gained before all of them, but I just added an approach section and broke into three sections called wedges, irons, and long irons. Wedges are anything, basically any shots, about 50 to 150 yards around there, where people will be using their sand and pitching wedges. The iron sections, 150 to 200 yards, where people will just be hitting their, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 irons. Then long irons, which could also be considered like fairway woods here, very long approaches around the 200 plus yard mark. And that's going to be, it's going to be important, but for different people. Basically, the way that you look at these stats, I mean, it is important to look at these stats historically, and I've got a section set up for that too, just looking how the different types of approach shots really matter, because this is a course where approach matters a ton. But when you break it down to the long irons, irons, and wedges, good thing to think about is if you're looking at a guy who's a bomber, hits at 300 plus yards, are you going to want to focus more on his irons and his wedges? Usually I'd say wedges, but this is a very long course, so he'll still be using his irons a lot. And if you're shorter off the tee, like anyone driving like 290 or under this week, are you really going to want to look at long irons? You're not going to want to have a short driver with poor long iron play. That's just not going to give you any success at a 7,400 yard course. So that's something that you can look at there. You don't want anyone to have a big hole in their game. You know, if someone's doing well with their irons and wedges, but are just losing strokes big time with the long irons, definitely a reason to be cautious here. And when looking at the results by stat here, looking at off the tee, or strokes gained off the tee and approach around the green and putting, approach sticks out by far the most. Guys who are gaining, if you're just looking at guys who gain over one stroke per round in each of these categories, just looking back historically, guys gaining strokes off the tee, they'll put up about 45 to 50 fantasy points on average, finish about 55th. Guys who are gaining strokes approach, they will finish, or they'll hit about 60 fantasy points on average. Average finish of 30th to 35th. I mean, that's a huge, huge jump right there. Just shows that approach way more important than off the tee right now. Then you look at strokes gained around the tee, or around the green. Strokes gained around the tee, that'd be horrible. But strokes gained around the green, guys gaining strokes there, they average about 45 to 50 fantasy points, finishing between 50 and 55th. So kind of similar to off the tee, even less important than off the tee, I'd say. That's kind of the case with scrambling. I know we liked it last week a lot. This week, greens are larger. They're not the tiny greens anymore. And it just hasn't really been a huge thing with success here, gaining strokes around the green, scrambling. It's really easy to scramble here. Then putting numbers. Putting numbers are always going to look pretty good historically. And here, if you're gaining strokes putting, you'll put up 55 to 60 fantasy points, and you'll have an average finish between 40th and 50th. Not quite as strong as the approach there, but the numbers were pretty close. This week it's pretty clear that approach is more important than putting. Putting is way more important than off the tee, and off the tee is more important than around the green. Of course, putting, we know this has a lot of noise, but looking back historically at the winners, only one person was able to win this thing without putting well, and that was Mr. Stephen Bowditch. Patrick Reed did finish runner-up in 2016, and he lost strokes just barely on the green. Other than that, all of your winners, top three finishers, really, they're all gaining tons of stroke putting. You need to have a good putting week. And, you know, it's not, we know it's not the greatest strategy to focus on guys who are putting well now, since putting can kind of swing week to week, so you kind of just hope someone has a good putting performance here. But again, looking at the guys finishing in the top three, all of them gain strokes approach. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They all gain strokes off the tee as well, but not nearly to the extent that guys are gaining strokes approach. When looking at correlations between finishing position and strokes gained stats, just R-squared numbers here, off the tee and around the green, they come in like 0.35. Not really a significant correlation there. But strokes gained approach, 0.54, and strokes gained putting, 0.52. So, obviously, putting is always going to be up there, I think, but approach is just so much more important than off the tee this week, and that's not something you usually see all the time. Even looking at driving distance and driving accuracy, those have very, very little correlation, 0.18, 0.17, respectively. It's just not as much about the driver. I know that driving distance will give you a little bit of advantage here. We've only had one really short winner. That was Ben Curtis back in 2012. Everyone else, every other winner has really been like a 300-plus yard driver. But it's not absolutely essential here. And driving accuracy is not really much important at all. But greens and regulation percentage, absolutely essential. You're going to need to hit these greens. I mean, this week is just, I know it's important a lot of times, but strokes gained approach, just massively important. Although I'm not seeing that much of a difference between the long irons, and wedge numbers and results here. Maybe a little bit of advantage to the wedge play, but really, it depends on the driver, or it depends on how long the guy drives. You know, if he's a super bomber, again, you're going to want to look more at the irons. If they're shorter, you're going to want to look at the long irons. But yeah, that's just another way to study up for this event here and look at what's mattered in the past, what's caused large fantasy scoring outputs, and just going through this and studying and seeing, you know, the correlation between finishing position and fantasy points, and you know, you can look at all sorts of things. You can see how often guys got the bonus of all rounds under 70. Not that often, since it's a par 72, honestly, but it's all factored in there. Definitely check out the historical performances tab on the research station, and of course use the domination station. That thing's been awesome. And for anyone that doesn't know, that is our multi lineup optimizer. Make up to 200 lineups very quickly, with all sorts of cool features in there. The projection system we've been using has been pretty nice all week, or not all week, hopefully this week, but it's been nice all year. It's produced some winners, and definitely liking how things are working out for this week. And yeah, remember, if you want access to the domination station, dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO. Let's get into the field here, or whatever is left of this field. Now, I guess saying that would imply that there was something there in the first place. It's year to year, it's not historically been a really strong field. We saw DJ here a few years ago. He was part of that morning wave in 2015. I'll never forget it. It was the first big wake up. It was pretty much the first like massive event in DK golf. A lot of people remember it just because the morning wave, the early AM wave, got absolutely demolished by 40-plus mile-an-hour winds. Pretty much everyone that teed off early on just got crushed. You guys were putting up 8-overs, 10-overs. I think DJ was like 10 or 11 over or something crazy. And then out of nowhere, like Matt Kuchar was like right in there with everyone else. But he is such an OG. He actually was a first round leader. He wasn't even in the afternoon wave. He was a first round leader after one. So that's interesting. This event really does have a lot of fun stories in it. You've got Kevin Na, who shot a 16 on a hole. And, you know, Sergio's trying to make his comeback after his ridiculous 13 at the Masters. So that's pretty funny there. And you've also got, important to note that the course history, I usually have it going back to 2010. Have it going back to 2011 this year. They made serious course renovations back in 2011. So you will hear that Zach Johnson has won this event twice. And Adam Scott's actually won in 2010. But it's best to just look at all the numbers since 2011, because that definitely represents this course. They made it a lot longer, and it plays a lot differently now. And I think in the I do believe it was the same event as like the really windy year in 2015. Another funny story: a guy that I'm actually going to talk about later is a really nice value play, Aaron Baddeley. He had quite the hole here. I think I've told this story on the podcast a few times. It's too great not to just tell over and over again. This guy, on a par four, it's one of these short par fours on this hole, or on this course. You've got two of them. I think it was the one that's like 330 some yards or whatever. You got the crazy wind going. It's behind his back. The dude launches it, just absolutely launches the thing into the ocean. It's gone, or just way out of bounds. Has to take a drop, goes back and tees it up again, you know, trying to save a bogey or whatever. You know, no worse way to start a par four. Second time he tees it off, he hits a hole in one. And that would be a historical par four hole in one, something you just never hear of. Instead, he just got a birdie. So he came close to making history, and he kind of almost did, but technically he didn't. Anyway, going on through the field here, you've got an interesting case this week with FanDuel and DraftKings pricing. I know that it's always really crazy with the discrepancies here, but we've actually got one of the top plays for the week in Billy Horschel. He is the same price on DraftKings as he is on FanDuel at 9,100, which is a bit of a head-scratcher. I'm not even sure it's FanDuel messing up here. It's DraftKings has him really, really expensive, but the odds books have him 33-1 right now, which is kind of bizarre for Horschel. He's been really, really horrible. But I guess his fifth place finish last year and his recent top fives at this event have him really boosted up there. But on FanDuel, it's like, it kind of makes him a real play, especially for anyone looking at the differences between DraftKings and FanDuel. And you've got guys like Adam Scott, who's 9,600 on DraftKings and 11,700. On FanDuel, Snedeker kind of the same way, Pat Perez kind of the same way. So, not as crazy as it has been. It's not 100% FanDuel being ridiculous here. Kind of a little bit of off-pricing by DraftKings on a few guys. But going through the field here, you know how I like to, the kind of $12,000 guys I like to target. Sergio, man, 14-1 for a $12,000 guy. That's, it's going to be tough, Sergio. The thing about this week, this is my take on this week. The odds makers, and we'll see how the drifts go. We'll see if Sergio gets bet on or if he gets bet further down, which would be my guess, as weather could be a bit tricky again. What was I going to say here? I'm just thinking, this field is kind of like, it's so large and it's so bad that there aren't really a lot of like bona fide plays here. You've got Charlie Hoffman, who's a pretty ridiculously good play and will be the highest owned golfer probably. And you've got Luke List, who's on like an extremely good run of form, but you don't really have a lot of like super value plays or real slam dunk plays that we've had over the last 2 weeks of super soft pricing. With this field, the chalk plays are going to be really questionable since the overall talent of this field is down. What I'm thinking is this week I just want to be as contrarian as possible. Like in GPP, you absolutely want to. I'll make the case for it here. just looking at the field, you know, the guys in the $9,000 range are like 27, 30, 35 to 1. And you're usually seeing those guys, you know, around like 20 to 1 or so. Go to the $8,000 guys and they're nearing 40, 50 to 1. It's just, the field is kind of just going to, like after round one, like half the guys on the leaderboard are going to be like, I will just play roulette here and name some random guys. It's going to be like Bob Estes and then Xinjiang Zhang, or Zhang, and then freaking Jeff Ogilvy. Like, those will be your leaders after round one. Like, I'm seeing sort of like Kodaira last week. We're going to have a guy come out of the woodwork and win this thing, I think. I think, you know, seeing really, really bad names near 100 to 1 in this field, and again, no one worse than like 800 to 1. I'm really feeling that a lot of, there are going to be these really weird 1% owned guys that are going to do well, and I'd rather go hunting for those kind of guys and hang my hat on them than focusing on like the odds value plays and things like that, because there really aren't many on DraftKings. DraftKings kind of stayed really tidy to the books. Not a whole lot of real super values. I mean, there are a few, especially on FanDuel, but really the pricing is kind of right-ish, but there are still going to be guys who garner a ton of ownership. I'm just all about fading them and just picking guys almost sort of based on how low-owned and sneaky they might be. It's one of those kinds of weeks where you can just pick like a random play and play a lot of him, and he'll be like 0.5% owned, and if he does anything, you're looking good. A couple of years ago, this was the best golf slate I ever played. Won several GPPs, a really good week, and it's funny how the previous year before that, the 2015 year, when I pretty much went all in on the guys in the AM waved and was none the wiser. It's funny how those kind of things work out, but yeah, this week I think you just need to be, you need to try to be different. You need to try to find the guy who's like 0.4% owned who'll win it for you. I know it's not the best strategy week to week, but in a weak field like this, it's not exactly like the Corrales Punta Canas event where everyone's like a super scrub, but the strategy is sort of the same. How the chalk is going to be chalky, and you're going to get like no real positive leverage from using like, say, a Luke List or even a Charlie Hoffman. I say play those guys in cash and just get off of them in GPP. I say that a lot, but that's just an awesome strategy for DFS golf. And if you're using the Domination Station lineup optimizer, I'd set a max percentage. Like, if you're multi-entering and playing a lot of lineups, I'd set a maximum percentage for like any one golfer at like something really low, like 20% this week. Usually I'd recommend like 30 to 40%, take some stands on some guys. I'd say mix it up this week. I think really you have to try to just not make boneheaded plays, but just like, if, let's look at a price range, for example, here. Like $7,200, the guy who has the best odds to win in this range would be like William McGirt, right? William McGirt's probably going to be like, say, 5% owned. Everyone else at 7,200 is probably going to be 0.5% owned. You could go for a guy like Martin Kaymer and get like very little ownership there. A guy who just won recently, Bryce Garnett, Graham McDowell, 27th last year. You know, you could get the guy that won me all the money back in 2016, a Mr. Martin Piller. Don't do that, though. I kind of want to play my guy, especially on FanDuel. But you know what I mean? These guys are going to be like under 1% owned. And they're like, what is the difference really between Graham McDowell and William McGirt? It's not a huge difference. But in ownership, you know, these guys that just have slightly better values, a better example be at like $7,400. Piercy 60 to 1. Everyone else in that range is like 75 to 80 to 1 at best. Piercy is probably going to get all the ownership there, probably around, I don't know, like 5%, 6%, something similar to the other example. And guys like John Ha, Kokrak, Fratelli, Austin Cook, they're going to be in that 1% owned range because there are so many guys to choose from with optimizers and people just looking at odds and stuff. They're going to almost always default on these top value guys. So I would kind of recommend fading those sort of guys and looking at your pivots here. You know, what's really the difference between Scott Piercy and John Huh? Is it the difference between 5% and 0.5% in ownership? Is Piercy really 10 times more likely to do better than Huh? You just got to think about these kind of things. And actually, there's a great example there because Huh's looking really, really nice. But let's go back up to the top of the field here. Just kind of giving you my strategy there of how I'm attacking this week personally. Top part of the field's really hard to just not use a bunch of Charlie Hoffman. Here's the thing with him. He's $10,900 on DraftKings, 11-2 on FanDuel. Going into last year, he had some of the craziest course history, and it was the week after Luke Donald continued his ridiculous run of like top threes at the RBC Heritage. Charlie Hoffman had an incredible run of top 13 finishes here. He finished top 13 from the year 2009 all the way until 2016. And last year, he was in the $11,000 range, very chalky, just because that course history is ridiculous. And he always comes in playing well at the Masters, etc. Same thing could be said this year. Now, last year, he almost missed the cut. He made the cut on the dot. He was one of the biggest cut sweats of the entire year. Ended up just crapping out a 40th place finish and tied with Mr. Matt Kuchar, fellow course horse this course here. Very underwhelming performances, but here we are again with Kuchar and Hoffman right at the top. This time we've got Sergio there as well. Sergio, I think, statistically, he's the best play here. Like, on paper, he's the best play. Like, on paper, it should be Sergio well over Kuchar, and then Kuchar well over Hoffman, more or less. Like, you know, it really should be, like, Scott third if you're just going by overall talent here. But, you know, with course history and recent form considered, you know, Hoffman has been awesome in the last three tournaments he's played. Really, outside of the Valspar, he's had an excellent 2018 season. And that course history there, I think he's definitely the play in cash. And I'll just be playing a lot of him just, you know, because kind of owe it to the guy. But, you know, Kuchar again, you know, we saw last week Kuchar was really good, really, really good. But the course history last week was a lot better, especially the course fit. Course fit way better for him last week than this week. And he's even more expensive at 11-4, or I think he's actually the same price if I recall correctly. But even though the field's weaker this week, still not huge on Kuchar. 40th and 42nd in the last 2 years here. Other than that, he has really good course history. But, man, Matt Kuchar is just someone I'm not going to pay a ton of dollars for. I didn't do it last week, and it kind of hurt me, but I did play him in cash. Here, I'm not even going to play him in cash. I'm going to play Hoffman. So Kuchar, man, I'm not going to have many shares of him at all, to be honest. And Sergio, back to Sergio here. I'm probably going to pay for some Sergio here. I know he had the one hole at the Masters. Other than that hole, he played fine. Nothing was wrong with him. He got a lot of birdies. Looking at this approach breakdown here, everything's been clicking for him. Long irons, wedges. His wedges have been on fire. Looking at his fantasy scoring for the course, he leads the field by far in long par 5 fantasy scoring, almost 2 fantasy points per hole. And the second closest person in that mark is Kevin Na at 1.8. He leads the field significantly there. And he also does pretty well, you know, on every hole type, really. He's up near the top of the field in every single fantasy scoring metric. And it's just because Sergio outclasses this field. He really does. He has no course history here. He hasn't played here since the renovations. So kind of a surprising guy to see here. But I think he is going to get a lot of ownership in GPPs for the namesake. I know he missed the cut at the Masters. And if you think that's going to lower his ownership, then you're probably kind of new to the sneaking the sneakman meta, because that's really been taking DFS by storm over the last year, and this is certainly going to be a week where everyone thinks that Sergio is sneaky. Everyone plays Sergio, and then we all realize, oh, Sergio is not sneaky, not one bit. And it's because Kuchar and Hoffman are just really unattractive, like, big money spending options, and especially, like, Ryan Moore. Going into that tier right underneath Garcia, Kuchar, and Hoffman, you know, don't like them a whole lot, at least in GPP, maybe a little Garcia. But and I guess just a little Hoffman, just because he's a really safe play. But looking at Ryan Moore and Luke List here, obviously Luke List is going to get a ton of love this week. He might be the highest owned guy, honestly. That game log is perfection. Top 26 finishes in his last 8 events. Now, he got rocked at the match play event. Don't get it wrong there. But other than that, man, he's been just lights out. We saw this from him last year. Last year, he had a very, very, very similar streak. Came in horrible off of the off-season, the swing season, just like this year. You know, this year, he began the season missing the cut horribly at the Sony and the Career Builder. And then just his streak of top 25 finishes, we saw the same thing last year. Except for just the weird thing about it, man. Last year for him was like the exact opposite of this year. This year, he was pretty bad in the swing season, and then early on going into the season. And then just really hot from like the Farmers Open through the West Coast Swing into the pre-Masters season here. He's just been on fire ever since the Farmers. Last year he was extremely hot coming in through the swing season and killed it in the first opening events. He had top 15 finishes in 5 events in a row. Then starting at the Farmers and through the West Coast Swing, missed cut, just missed every cut in the West Coast Swing, opposite of this year, and then gets back into a pretty good groove going in through the RBC Heritage. You know, does well at the Houston, does well at the Puerto Rico, Arnold Palmer, Valspar, etc. You know, does well in the Florida Swing, and then right here at the Texas Open, missed the cut here last year, and that just started a huge streak of missed cuts for him. So Luke List is someone who, he's sort of like Brian Harman, but like, he looks really, really good on paper. Actually, it's very similar to Harman here because he's just incredibly streaky. Long term, if you go even farther back than that, it's the same sort of thing. He has these really high-end finishes and can go week to week to week. I guess it really could be you could argue that's a really good thing. You kind of want a guy who's streaky, but he will fall off a cliff and then miss the cut, and then the next week he'll miss the cut again. Just seen it a lot from List, and right now he's on one of his upswings, and he's been hitting it really well. You know, super long off the tee, the longest of all the studs by far here, hitting it 315 off the tee. Statistically, though, he's really just been gaining most of his approaches, or gaining most of his strokes, not in approach, but around the green. Not a very good putter, as always. He's never really been a great putter. Just getting it done around the green, and that's not as important this week. Looking at off the tee and approach strokes gained, he's just right at zero, just dead average. So he's not really gaining his strokes, ball striking. It's coming around the green. This week I can see it coming back a little bit, and again, he did miss that cut here last year. I like the List to fade just based on the merit of him being the chalk. But I think that there are some extra factors this week that come into the List fade here. Looking at long-term made cut percentages, everyone 9,000... Well, okay, let's not count Billy Horschel because he's also another kind of bad play up here, but I'll talk about him. Excluding Horschel, who also kind of sucks, everyone in DK, $9,000 and up, their made cut percentage is over 80% long term. Garcia, Kuchar, Scott, these guys are at 90% or better. Like, Kuchar is 91% because he's just a god like that. Luke List, long-term, made cut percentage, 60%. He's not of the pedigree of these guys. He just is not. Same goes for Horschel. He used to be. Horschel used to definitely be in this pedigree, but he's been so bad over the last year and a half, I can't. So List, you know, if you're just going by the game logs, you've already locked in List 100% in every lineup. But I strongly suggest a fade here in GPP. He's going to be highly projected and all. He has better odds on value straight up compared to Ryan Moore, and he's definitely going to trend. Right now, when I first looked at the European books to start off with, List was 25, 24 to 1. Right now in the American book, she's drifted all the way to 19-1. So when I post the odds drift tomorrow night, I bet you List makes a movement because he's getting some love. He absolutely is here. But moving to Adam Scott here, $9,600, 11-7 on FanDuel, which is crazy, but we'll get him low owned at least. Scott's been looking good. He's looking like he's back to form. Had the scare at the Pebble Beach with the bad miscut, but he's back to his cut making ways. $9,600. This is a cash play. It absolutely is a cash play. Just because obviously the long term made cut percentage is nasty. And honestly, if you're playing cash, that's like the stat you want to look at right there. Just made cut percentage. It's so important and so just. It's just an obvious thing to look at, but it really does show the long-term pedigree of players, and it's really easy to agree, you know? I mean, guys that make cuts long-term are your better golfers, you know? The guys who rank highly in that, it's not like they're flukes at all, you know, because there's plenty of a sample size here going back longer term, but, you know, your high made cut percentage guys, Zach Johnson, Adam Scott, Matt Kuchar, Garcia, you look at it and you're like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Those are the guys you want to be playing in cash. They're just bona fide, and the guys you want to stay away from in cash, like Luke List. If anyone plays Luke List in cash, that's just weird to me. I know the form's there, but he's just like overperforming, and he's overperformed like this again. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he like wins this thing. I don't know, but I just like the fade anyway because the leverage is just so much better if you fade him, but I could see playing him. But back to Scott, I think Scott's also going to be popular, especially in cash. And I like playing him a lot more than List, just because I think he's definitely going to be lower owned. He's 30-1 compared to List 24-1 or wherever it is by the time Thursday rolls around. Then going on to last year's defending champion, Kevin Chappell, fourth the year before that as well, had some rough finishes in 2015-2014. But other than that, he has several really good finishes here. The first year after the redesign, runner-up in 2011, withdrew in 2012, but 15th in 2013. So other than a couple of off performances, he has really, really good course history here. And he's been rolling through 2018, but he's definitely hit a wall since the Masters. Did not do well at the Masters at all. After a 7th place finish in 2017, he missed the cut by multiple strokes at the Masters. Not a great sign. Missed the cut by one stroke at the RBC Heritage, and that's better. I mean, I like missing the cut by one stroke, but still. Kind of wish he would have made the cut here. Very expensive for a guy who's missed two cuts in a row. I think that's going to keep people off of him, but Chappell just, he rates out for this course really well. He does have a struggle. He struggles pretty hard with long par threes. Numbers aren't the greatest there, but if you're going to struggle in any of these categories, you kind of want it to be the par threes. Very good at par fours. Anything par four, he crushes. Stroke scanned approach, he's always been just excellent at approach. Although right now we're seeing his wedges and longer irons are looking a lot better than his just regular iron play here, but still, he's a longer driver, and hopefully with the three-shot par fives here, he can really put his good wedge game to play or into effect here, and it's obviously a place he knows how to get around at. Looked just excellent here last year. Looking back at last year for him, hit 72% of greens of regulation, just an awesome number there. Was spectacular in his long iron proximity, and gained two strokes approach every round. That was better than that was one of the best marks we had ever seen at the Texas Open. And he was usually a bad putter, but he gained 0.77 strokes each round putting. So if he can have a performance like that, which he hasn't been having that lately with the putter, but you know, his putting, if you look at the whole season, his putting has really been there. Not a great putter long term, but he's been putting better in 2018. That's led to some success. It's kind of gone away from him here, but heading back to a place where he's the defending champion, I think he can definitely make a lot more noise at a lower ownership than he really should have, just due to his last few finishes here. I like Chappell a lot, and I don't like the other plays in this range a lot at all. Billy Horschel at 9,100. Again, man, you just play him on FanDuel. Brant Snedeker at $9,000. You're going to play him on DraftKings because he's 11-5 on FanDuel. But even on DraftKings, he's better last week. He had missed the two cuts coming in. T23 last week at a course that made a lot of sense for him. This course doesn't make as much sense for him. I like his play in the wind if it does get a bit windy. And again, be sure to check in Wednesday night when I go over the weather. If the weather does get a bit windy, if you remember, he had that epic round during the 2016 Farmers Insurance Open where there were gale force winds, and he was the only one out there under par. He was like three strokes under par, backdoored the win there. So he's always been in his low ball flight and stuff. He's always been a good wind player. There are just a few of those guys you got to think about if the wind does get a little out of control here. Won't be as bad as 2015, but it may be. Who knows? Just always be on alert. That's what that week taught me, for sure. Right after Snedeker here, you've got Brendan Steele at $8,900. He'll be pretty popular. He's a former winner here in 2011, fourth in 2012, and eighth in 2015, 13th in 2016. Not so great last year at the T62 finish, but really historically one of the better golfers here. Missed the cut at the Masters by one stroke, which wasn't great, but one of the things I do like about him here, very, very good fantasy score. You have to appreciate that. Maybe not as much on a week like this, but I know we focus on that more like your no cuts and like your smaller field events, but still always a good thing to be a really good fantasy score, just straight up like per hole. Averages exactly one fantasy point per hole, and no one else in this field does, so he actually leads the field there. Just always a good thing to have, especially when you're playing on DraftKings. We want the DraftKings scoring. We don't care about the like scoring average. We care about fantasy points because that's what we're collecting here. But anyway, Steele, kind of the issue with him recently has been his long irons, which is weird because he used to always be very good with his long irons, but his regular irons and his wedges have been on fire, just immensely good. So right now, just looking at that, you kind of want to play him on a shorter course. And, he actually hasn't played a lot over the last 2 months. The only thing he's played was the match event, or the match play event, and the Masters. So he really is a guy that prefers the West Coast swing for sure. But $8,900, I know the price kind of expensive for Steele here, but he's a really nice GPP play, I think. Xander Schauffele missed the cut here last year. It was okay last week. I mean, the Masters, he kind of snuck in the cut. That's definitely a forgivable performance of 50th at the Masters. It's actually all right. He made the cut and he was actually doing like much better, but he was pretty trash the weekend there at the Masters. I won't lie, he was pretty horrible. And horrible here last year, but I think he can bounce back. He's a really good golfer. And I like this course set up for him a lot better than I did last week. And he did all right last week, I guess. But yeah, $8,800 with guys who I think will be a little bit more popular than him in Schneider Jans and Steele in this category. And who knows, after last week, Siwoo Kim or Chesson Hadley. God, I think Schauffele and Steele are the safe plays in this $8,000 range. I think it's going to kind of go ignored a lot here, but I like Schauffele. I like him long term. I just like a lot about his game. Really bad putter, but if he can put it together at all, he can definitely do it for you. Ollie Schneiderjans, $8,700, $9,400 on FanDuel. Very good FanDuel value there. He's been just okay. He's been making cuts again. I know he missed the cut at the Genesis Open by one stroke and the Farmers by one stroke. It's forgivable, but he hasn't really had the high upside finishes lately. He's been finishing in the low 40s a lot. He finished 18th here last year. Now he's coming off of an event at the RBC Heritage where he finished third, and he just finished 42nd last week. He's not in that really high upside kind of form that he was in earlier in the season. Maybe he could strike again. I've been playing him hoping that he will, but I don't like his long par 5 scoring. It's kind of weak for someone that hits the ball like he does. And really, actually his driving numbers have deteriorated a lot. He used to be a 300 yard driver. He's hitting at 292 right now. Gaining his strokes putting and around the green, I don't like to see that, actually. So I'm not really feeling Ollie a whole lot here. I know I played him a lot at the RBC Heritage, and it's not like I don't appreciate the fact he made the cut and everything. It's just, I don't know. $8,700, really expensive. I'd just rather play Xander or Brendan Steele, to be honest. Siwoo Kim, $8,600, 9-6 on FanDuel. 22nd here last year, missed the cut in 2016. He's coming off of, he should have won last week. he really kind of blew it. Let Kodira in there at the end. He was running away with that. I thought for sure he was going to win that thing, because he has like three, or he almost had his third win on tour, which is crazy thinking about who he is. But I guess there are some tournaments he can't close out, I guess. But yeah, 24th at the Masters, that's where we kind of started opening our eyes and going, okay, let's see what's going on here. And then last week, second, that's going to get him on people's radar, but, you know, wasn't any good really going into that. Admit him making cuts on and off, I guess, but last year his injury just made him god-awful and horrible. But he's not withdrawing from tournaments anymore. He looks to be 100% back. But, man, $8,600. Guy, I know the field is weak, but that just seems like way too much to pay for Siwoo. Hadley was a guy. Hadley's $8,500 on DraftKings here. He's a guy I didn't like last week at all, because his numbers on the medium par fours or whatever were just really trash. And they had a bunch of those on the in the field, but... man, he kind of got together. He had a really, really good go of it. Top 10 finish last week. So, man, if you just throw out the Valspar and the Honda Classic, I think that was another reason I hated Hadley, is because those two events, he missed the cut by many strokes, like horribly. And those were the less than driver courses. And the RBC Heritage one was one as well. That's why I really didn't like him there. But I guess he can do these less than driver courses after all, but that doesn't matter this week, because this is definitely an all the driver course. And he's been really good. If you look at the longer courses, he's hit at 18th at the Houston Open, 5th at the Waste Management, 23rd at the Farmers Insurance Open. Hadley, since coming back from the Web.com Tour, has been amazing. 0.98 fantasy points per hole. I'll put him second in the field right there. Very good in the long par fours and long par threes. Gaining strokes putting and off the tee, I don't like that he's losing strokes pretty significantly approach right now. It's a little scary. If you look a little further, it's just like his regular iron play that's not really there. His wedge play is pretty good. A lot of the higher dollar guys have really good wedge play, because it's just I think it's just easier to gain strokes with your wedge, actually. I'm not entirely sure about I'm not entirely sure what goes into the strokes gained algorithm exactly. I know it compares your shot at a distance compared to everyone else, or where everyone else on tour hits it from that distance or whatever, but yeah, you notice a lot of guys seem to gain just a few more strokes with the wedge than they do irons and long irons. I think that's just innate, but anyway here, I guess I'm playing Hadley now. I don't think he's going to be crazy popular. He never is, and that would be the reason to fade him. But if he's not going to be super popular, and he did miss the cut last time he played here in 2016, but I don't care. I'll play some Hadley. He's a new golfer. I'm liking the fantasy point statistics. It's just something I'm going to be going after this week, because I don't want my GPP guys to just win. I want them to crush. I want some eagles. I want some birdies. And a guy who's good at giving you those things. Pat Perez, $8,400 on DraftKings. Way too expensive on FanDuel. Probably a cash game play. I know he missed the cut at the Masters, but that's the Masters. That's totally different ball game there. He's right there with Hadley. Comes in just under him. Again, 0.98 fantasy points per hole. Very good marks there. And not as strong at the hole types that we're looking for, like with Hadley, but really just a good overall game. Not really losing strokes anywhere. Gaining a lot of strokes off the tee. Seeing it, not really long, but hitting it very, very accurately. Just long enough to be okay. He's hitting over 290, but 67% driving accuracy, 69% greens of regulation. Those are good numbers. And Pat Perez has a very good course history here as well. Hasn't played her since 2015, but since 2011, he's played three times, all top 20 finishes from him. So Perez at $8,400, like that play, and I like it for cash, even though he's coming off the miscut, because he gets the Masters, who cares? Ryan Palmer, $8,300. Three straight top six finishes for him coming in. A good course history didn't do jack for him last week, where he missed the cut by, or I don't think he missed the cut, but he came last of anyone that made the cut. Like, he was really bad on the weekend. Missed the cut horribly at the Houston. Palmer's been really, he's been an interesting kind of guy. Missing a lot of cuts, but like second at the Farmers. 28th at Valspar, which doesn't make any sense for him to be good at the Valspar, but yeah, I don't like his approach game right now. So the course history, yeah, it's very tempting, but there's no odds value on him. Not really, just not a good value compared to like Perez or Palmer straight up. I'm gonna take Perez almost every time, and if people are going to be playing Palmer because of his course history, I mean, I know he was part of the team that helped me win, so maybe I owe him a little, but I kind of like fading Palmer a lot because he misses a lot of cuts. But yeah, I don't really know what to make of him. Don't know what to make of Jimmy Walker either. He's another confusing case. He's been playing really good golf lately. Looked excellent at the Masters, but I know I say the same thing about him every time, and everyone does now. It's just, don't know how the Lyme disease will affect him, you know, because it comes back and forth in waves. I know a few people that have it to varying degrees. Some of them can't imagine that someone could be a pro golfer with it, and other people are like, eh, I don't really notice it most of the time. And it's sort of like having an STI where it kind of comes in and out every now and again. So I don't know. It's kind of a gamble with Jimmy Walker here. His course history kind of looks like that. Won in 2015, the year of the crazy win. 13th year last year. In 2016 and 2012, though, he finished like 140th and 143rd, like crazy bad. So like a lot of the guys here with top 10 finishes also have horrible miscuts. So not going crazy with the course history here. Just another reason I like the Palmer fade. But Walker, $8,200. I played a little bit of him at the Masters. I think I'm going to just play a touch here just because the Lyme disease thing really does keep his ownership low. He's always under 3% owned. And it's probably going to happen this week, especially with the price tag being a little bit higher than I guess it should be. Bo Hostler comes in at a little bit of odds value. He looked good last week. Good follow-up from his second place finish at the Houston Open. So I think he's going to get a little love. He's sort of like Kodaira here. He's hit some really, really solid short-term form. Issue I have with him is he finished like last in this field last year. Not even relatively close to the cut line. I want to look it up real quick. I want to see what his score was. It was, he was 8 strokes over par. Shot a 75 and followed up with a 77. Gain strokes approach and everything. He just could not putt or keep it on the fairway at all whatsoever. So yeah, it's another cool thing you can do with this historical performances thing. If you want, you can just filter it by any golfer you're looking at and just look at how he's done statistically each year of this event. Really awesome tool there. Definitely come check it out. DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO, wink wink. $8,000. Guy that was chalky last weekend is going to be, I think he's going to be stupid chalky this week, to be honest. Not on FanDuel, but on DraftKings. I'm talking Zach Johnson. No love. No love for Zach Johnson. They give this guy no love. Technically, he's not a two-time winner at this course, but he is a two-time winner at this event. And outside of a pretty bad miscut here last year, 3 years before that, really the only years he's played since his wins, 29th, a 20th, and a 6th place finish in 2014. That's pretty good for me. It's going to be good for a lot of the field. He has not missed a cut all year. 0.98 fantasy points per hole. there's not a whole lot to not love about Mr. Zach Johnson here. The numbers wise this year, he's been losing strokes approach, and it's been his long iron. So, you know, he's only 290 off the tee. That's a little bit worrisome, but we've seen him attack these super long courses, and have success at them. The Masters, obviously, he did pretty well, and didn't do bad at the Arnold Palmer Invitational either. I guess he did skip a lot of the events like the Farmers and Pebble Beach and stuff. 57th at the Waste Management, man. But this guy in cash games, you know, he's going to be a V play. He might be higher owned than like a Charlie Hoffman, honestly, on a week like this. Cause I think people might go Sergio in cash. So Zach Johnson, yeah, that's I love this play, but so is everyone else. I think in GPP it probably is smart to fade him, but man, I kind of like the safety, so I really think he's gonna make the cut for you. But look, if you want to look at a direct pivot here, Martin Laird, $8,000 winner here in 2013, 18th here last year, and after a very very rough start to the season, started to put it together kind of low key. He was looking really really good early last week, top five for the early rounds there, and ended up falling back to a 32nd place finish. But ninth at the Genesis Open, ninth at the Waste Management Open, 26th at the Arnold Palmer. You know, four out of his last five cuts have been made. Laird's gonna be sneaky, and he'll be a nice pivot off of Johnson, because I guarantee you Zach Johnson has like 10 times the ownership of Martin Laird at the same price. And even though Zach Johnson might possibly be 10 times better than Laird, I kind of doubt it still. And I really, really like Laird's approach numbers, gaining half a stroke approach. And that's, of all the guys I've talked about, outside of Brant Snedeker, who has about the same number there, he's the best at approach. He's just losing a lot of strokes off the tee, which is kind of weird to see. He's losing strokes off the tee, but at the same time, he's hitting a hair under 30 or 300 yards. The driving accuracy is 64%, but yeah, I do prefer looking at the strokes getting off the tee numbers, because that does put it into proper context a lot of the time. But yeah, I need to get going through this like 7 and 6K range here. Just a lot of interesting plays and just a lot of plays overall to go through here. But I don't want another 2 hour long podcast like at the Masters. I'm just gonna run through the rest of the plays here. Really, if you wanna look at the whole field, you gotta come over here to DFSArmy.com. The research station is just sick. You can see all this stuff for yourself. But just pointing out some key plays here in this mid 7K range. There's a smorgasbord of options. Some of the best values here would be one of your Kevins, Kevin Na or Kevin Streelman. Streelman's gotten it together. He only missed the one cut at the Valspar. Other than that, he's been a made cut machine. He's made every cut here as well. Very strong cash game consideration, one Mr. Kevin Streelman, while Mr. Kevin Na screwed over a lot of people last week. Missing a cut by one stroke is a very popular golfer. Good on the very, very good on the long par fives, actually. I don't know how, but Kevin Na has always been excellent at long par five scoring, and I can't really explain it. The only other part of his game, when looking at fantasy scoring, where he excels, long par threes. He's a very, very nice, very nice setup for this course here from Na. He missed the cut, but it was by one stroke last week, and the last two times he's played this event, top 20s. Loving me some Kevin Na for the sneaking GPP. That's my GPP Kevin is Na. My cash Kevin is Kevin Streelman. That's the way to go with him. I'll talk about my other GPP Kevin later. There's another one down there. I guess I already talked about Chapel. That's another GPP Kevin of mine. My favorite we'll get to. Jamie Lovemark's looking like a pretty good play. Haven't seen him in a few weeks. Maybe people have forgotten about him, but he's made six straight cuts in a row. A lot of top 25 finishes in that span. Played here back in 2012 as like an 18-year-old. Didn't make the cut or anything, but since then, he's made his last two cuts here. Very good odds value. Probably going to be a popular play. Lovemark is 7-7. Then you've got Jim Furyk. who made the cut just barely last week, put up no fantasy points as always. But he has a couple top 10 finishes here back in 2014, 2013. Hasn't played in a few years. Then Bill Haas at $7,600. Top 10 for Haas last week at the RBC Heritage, a place he's had success at before. Nice to see Haas doing well. Showed up for the home crowd there in Carolina, but this is a place he hasn't played at all. Never played here. But he's one of the top values on the domination station. Excellent at the long par 5 scoring and long par 3 scoring, just like Na. A very sneaky play for that. And his wedge game is hot fire. He is a beast with a wedge. Long-term made cut percentage, around 80%. And that's with the struggles that he's had over the last, like, half a year or so. So if he is rounding back into form at all, and if you look at it, four out of his last five cuts made for Haas, and the one cut was at the Houston Open, and it was by one stroke. Or no, he made that cut. Yeah, that was a, he didn't MDF or anything, but he made the cut and then just finished horribly. Took a T76 finish home there, but, or maybe, I don't know, maybe that, I have to guess here just based on seeing the 76, but I'm pretty sure that either that's a, just made the cut and sucked ass, or missed the cut by one stroke, but nonetheless, four out of his last five cuts made. Obviously, you can't play him on FanDuel at $10,600, but for 7-6 on DraftKings, an excellent value for Bill Haas here. You've got Chris Paisley, who's been incredible overseas recently, but other than that, is kind of a scrub. He's 7-6. Julian Suri, who we saw get a top 10 recently, he's also 7-6, but not too huge on those guys. Just GPP shots right there. Chris Kirk, two top 15 finishes in the last 3 years for him here. Made the cut last week, which is all right. He's been making cuts this season, but not like, he hasn't been really good like he was two seasons ago. And the same thing could be said for Mr. Russell Knox, same price. Did pretty all right last week, but fell back a lot on Sunday. I don't know, he's been up and down a lot this season. Looking pretty good, then he'll miss a cut on you. But at a field like this, a $7,500 price tag for some with the skill level of Knox, that's going to be a pretty good value. Definitely going to be better than like Sharma or Gay or something like that. Again, like I talked about earlier, with the $7,400 range, there is Piercy there, but everyone's going to play Piercy in this range, so I really like taking the pivot with John Ha, who he might actually be a little bit popular just because he has made 8 out of his last 9 cuts with, looks like, it's hard to make a little stat here, but he hasn't finished worse than 45th in all of those. Really loves to finish between 20th and 30th. He is like full on Stuart Sink right now. Loves coming T26 or whatever. Like that's where he's going to be at. And at 7-4, that's a great value. He did that exact thing last year here, finishing T22. You've got Harris English, who misses the cut a ton of the time, but when he's, you know, I don't know how, but he has 3 top 11 finishes so far this season, along with 5 missed cuts. So that's English for you. Definitely a GPP play. Another thing real quick is that Ha and English, both very excellent the long par 4s. Also at $7,400, another guy that's very good, the long par 4, or not par 4, sorry, par 3s, Austin Cook. And he's had he made the cut last week at least, but the missed cut at the Masters and the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, other than that, he's been perfect this season. Still getting no love on DraftKings, he never has. And I don't think he ever will until he, like, wins something, or again. He already won, and he's still just getting no love, so, man. dipping down to the low 7K range here, that's when it starts to get pretty bad. You should just, honestly, even though his course history sucks here, he hasn't made the cut yet in two starts. At $7,300, Nick Watney has yet to miss a cut this year. 4-for-4 in cuts made. Another just solid finish. He hasn't had a top 25 yet, but man, he's like, he's looking like Martin Laird of old. Like, he is just a lock to make the cut, but he's also, like, a lock to not finish top 25. He's just always going to finish, like, T38, and that'll do you, like, in cash. But I don't know about playing him in cash here exactly with the course history, but meh. A player I really like, and I hope he doesn't get popular. I really doubt he gets popular. He's not a popular kind of golfer, like, at all. But Aaron Baddeley, excellent course history here. He's never missed the cut. Fifth last year. I do believe he won this event back in, like, 2008 or something. Like, he's always had, like, the little emo boy haircut, but he's low-key, like, 30, almost 40 years old. So he's been playing for quite a while, but he's been getting it together. He'd been really bad. Like, people have definitely forgot about him. He used to be rostered a lot more way back in the day, sort of, but, like, he had been so bad, like, last season into the swing season. Just awful. But he's kind of put it past him. Missed the cut by a few strokes at the Sony Open to begin the year. But he missed the cut by one stroke at the Houston Open and the Farmers Insurance Open. Other than that, it's been all made cuts for him. Now, the Houston Open is a really crappy one. It's another Texas event, and it was one he also had very good course history at, so that's a little bit concerning. But he made the cut last week at the RBC Heritage. Really, only one good finish this year, the T14 at the Genesis Open, but he's been making cuts, and he obviously knows how to get around here. Just a play to consider, and he's actually coming in at lower odds than guys like Grayson Murray, Jonathan Vegas, who will get a little bit more love here. Yeah, just going down to 7-2 here. I think I made this example earlier. You've got McGirt there, but you can definitely pivot to McDowell, Garnett, Keimer, Pan, who did well last week. And then if you want to be a jerk and steal my guy, I'm trying to get at 0.001% ownership. Probably won't get him here, but Mr. Martin Piller on FanDuel, he is a great play. 7,300, almost cheaper than on FanDuel or than on DraftKings, where he's 7-2. Fourth here in 2016, and even back in 2011, when he played here a while ago and finished T23, Texas guy, he's been really bad. Like, he's always bad. He's not a good golfer, really. Like, web.com level, he plays a lot on the web.com tour. Now, he's been playing on the PGA tour, he has his card and everything right now, but missed cuts at the Sony, Farmers, Pebble Beach, I think just barely made the cut, the Genesis and Honda. Horrible miscut, the Valspar, Arnold Palmer. The only saving grace he has so far is third place finish at the Career Builder. Now, that's impressive, because he had to put up like a minus 20-something fantasy point performance. That's impressive, but also, most recently, T24 at the Houston Open. That's a little sign of life for him. But, yeah, I've talked too much about a guy I'm trying to make sneaky. Gosh dang. Stuart Sink, $7,100. He's back to his cut-making ways, 22nd here last year. Then $7,000. The GPP Kevin I was going to talk about. Kevin Tway, he is a Texas guy. Third place finish here last year. And if really it started, the Kevin Tway value train for me. I know he didn't really catch on last year, but the dude made like after this event where he really started to catch people's attention, the dude just made cuts left and right, nonstop, just made cuts, always finishing like 40th or whatever. And he's kind of gotten back to that way. He made four cuts in a row now. Throughout the swing season, he was also making cuts. He had just ran into a little he's had some troubles with the less than driver courses, Honda, Valspar, RBC Heritage. Missed cuts there, except for he did make the cut last week at the Heritage, but finished T67. Get rid of those, and he's looking really good. Even the Genesis Open is somewhat of a lesson driver course. The full driver courses, though, has been excellent at all of them, making the cut at least. So, Mr. Tway for 7K. You know what I say? And then Landry, who we're looking at a bit last week with his numbers, made the cut and did all right. Again, the key stat we were looking at him for last week doesn't really matter this much this week, so kind of never mind there. Another course horse, Daniel Summerhays. He had four top 13 finishes in a row going into last year, and T58 last year, and he's made the cut 6 years in a row here. Now, he has been bad. He's been pretty bad, actually just playing sporadically. He's made one of three cuts so far in the season. The cut made was the T55 at Pebble Beach, so nothing that great, but I think he had a good finish or two over the swing season. But you're really only playing him for course history here. Not a huge advocate of doing that, but his numbers are really polarizing, I guess, because he's only played a few events, but like his putting and his around the green numbers kind of off the charts. Approach numbers, not good. And it's very obvious what it is. Wedge play is awesome, but his iron play, not good. So I'm kind of worried about Summer Hayes. Summer Hayes, he was definitely in better form in his career, 2013 through 2016, that is for sure. He's kind of fallen off a cliff here in 2017, 2018. So the course history there is nice, but I would definitely keep him in check. He's 240-1. Landry there is 120-1, and Tway's 100-1. So value-wise, don't get caught up in the course history for Summer Hayes. Then you've got Abraham Answer. Right now he ranks out as our top value. 92-1 odds at $6,900. Very good value on DraftKings. Top 16 finishes in his last three PGA Tour events. He has made his name known. He didn't do well at his home event at the WGC Mexico. Now, I don't know for sure if that is his home event. I'm not going to pretend like I know if he's from Mexico City or not, but he is from Mexico. I know this. And despite not doing the greatest at the WGC Mexico event, his last three events on tour, he must have been invigorated by that event or something, because he's been doing very well. Finished 16th at the Valspar, 13th at the Corrales Punta Canas, another very weak field there, and then 8th at the Houston Open. Now, all three of these events did not have the strongest of fields, but this one definitely doesn't. The odds value is crazy on him. He's definitely going to get some love. The game log looks good too. But at $6,900, guys rarely ever go past like 10% owned, so it's not that big of a deal. But it's definitely going to make guys in this price range very under-owned. And you've got some guys in pretty decent form. Not entirely sure about Nate Lashley here at 6'9", but he's finished 18th and 28th his last two events here. And Tyrone Van Aspegen, $6,900, $8,500 on FanDuel. No thanks there, but Ass Vegan, or the Ass Wagon, as a lot of people call him. He does one thing. He just makes cuts. He's like I explained Laird earlier, always finishing just barely above the cut line. He's missed two cuts so far this year, but one cut. One cut at the Farmers Insurance Open. But like, oh yeah, never mind. Yeah, at the Arnold Palmer, that would be a missed cut there. So two missed cuts for him. But I think if you look like even into the swing season, he's got something crazy like 14 out of 16 made cuts or whatever. He won't put up crazy good finishes here, but I mean the 23rd last week was pretty good. Shorter off the tee and loses all of his strokes off the tee, etc. But everywhere else is looking all right. Long term made cut percentage is 73%, just way better than everyone else in this range for sure. And then going down $6,800 and lower, it gets a little to be desired. Ben Martin has been a cut maker this year, only one missed cut in 8 events for him, so he can be considered, but he's not really high upside play. A guy we used to ride a lot, but guy has just fallen off the face of the earth, Nick Taylor, 22nd and 21st here in his two times that he's played at this event. But boy, he started the season off all right. Last season he was kind of if you remember, late last season, he was a made cut machine. But, man, missed the last four cuts. Four of the last five times he's teed it up, he's missed the cut. You just can't really play him in that form, even with the history there. Sorry. And Sam Ryder, same price. He only had the one good finish with Tiger back at Houston. I wouldn't play him. It's hard to play any of these guys down here. I really don't like this range. $6,600, there's Harold Varner there. I know he's been also missing cuts, but he's been missing cuts by one and two strokes. He can get it together here. Good course history for him here. Then just not liking anyone else in this range, to be quite honest. I know Andrew Putnam has put together a few good finishes here, but one of those is at the Corrales Putacanas or whatever. He's not a great golfer, but if you need to go to $6,500 for whatever reason that may be, he's the guy you pick. I mean, Hunter Mahan is like one of my favorite golfers growing up, but I could never really recommend playing him in 2018. So, that'll do it for this field. Gone down to the field, talk about most of the important guys here, the strategy for the Texas Open. It's going to do it. It's getting late here. It's not even Taco Tuesday anymore. It's now Taco Wednesday. Sorry for getting the podcast out to you a little bit later. I like to try to get out on Tuesdays. It'll be coming out it's Wednesday morning right now. Reason being, the PGA Tour site was down. If anyone else here does stats, they know what I'm talking about here with the PGA Tour. Their shit was down on Monday, so couldn't do anything. So I got to twiddle my thumbs all day. Then today was, tax day. Just running around all over the place doing stuff. Not taxes, but, you know, busy life. So that'll do it. I'll see you guys next week. I think that if I'm not mistaken, it's the Byron Nelson next week, which is going to be a better event than this one. So, I can't wait for that one. Kind of want this tournament to be over with. Even though it's a tournament I kind of like, it's just this field and stuff. It's not really one to get too excited about. But I'll make some bold plays this week. I'm definitely feeling like a week I'm going to go lighter on the bankroll, but make some like really crazy plays and really strong fades, stuff like that. Just have fun with it. Try to win another GPP. But I hope at least one of you guys do. We've been hitting some huge, humongous caches. Gonna need to see some more of them from you Army guys. And for anyone listening that wants to check out our research station, look at all of these amazing numbers, DFSArmy.com. Use promo code TACO on sign up to support the pod. There's a link to the website in the description of this. If you're listening to this on iTunes or YouTube, go check it out. And I'll see you guys next week. Later.